Wall Street wackos, welcome back to Miku's Crack House. This is episode 130. I'm your host, as always, Sam Kingma, and joining me is my best friend and co-host, Miles J. Miles, we got a great question from the Discord, which you can join.
Sorry, I have to lower myself to manlet status. God, so yes, I'm closer definitely. To the microphone. Yeah,
there we go. Perfect. You sound wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Anyways, continue.
We have a question from the Discord, which you can join. Link in the description. Ask us anything you want, and if it's a good question, we'll read it on the show. And
we're like, honor that would be, right?
Exactly. You can be ingrained in Crack House lore.
Like, to be fair, we have some good characters that are worth the ingrainmanship is kind of worth it for some of facts. These characters. I mean, obviously, you know, everyone remembers Yoink. Everyone remembers Yoink. Classic
remembers
character.
R.I.P.
Yeah, she died recently.
Rest in pepperoni.
Rest in pizza pie. She's not dead, by the way. Just in case anyone feels sad about what just happened.
She's sad alive about and well. Our nonchalant discussing of Yoink's passing.
Yeah, Yoink's demise.
Yeah, but anyways, you could become a ingrained in Crack House lore like Mulgar with his great question of, Sam has complained before about how game reviews can have a skewed perspective on games based on the fact that the only criteria for finishing a game is rolling credits. Skip to the bottom if you want the... Okay, there's some context. We see how this model is not ideal with reviews of very long games, like Witcher 3 and Phantom Pain. And then he gets down to it. My question is, if rolling credits is not a satisfactory way to evaluate games, what should the standard be? How does a flat hour investment sound? Each long game gets only 20 to 30 hours at most before you have to submit your review. So, Miles, like, how do you feel about this? Because it's kind of weird, because it's hard to review games because all games are radically different. So having a one-size-fits-all mold for game reviews specifically, I just don't think works or is conducive to, like, good discussions about the games.
See, you know? What I would love in an ideal world is what the completionist is able to do, where it's like, you should have, like, the review embargo aspect of it be like, and this is impossible, literally impossible, no one could do this, which is that you have someone who just does the golden path and someone who gets all the content or does as much content as they can and kind of says like, well, here's how the experience is at fucking 300 hours. Like, you know, because the Phantom Pain would probably not have reviewed as well if Konami didn't
send people
lie.
To boot camp.
Yeah, if they didn't lie about the way that game plays out and make it like, because people only got to play like 45 hours when it's still the best thing that's ever happened to you in your entire life, because the game doesn't really start to lose steam until the second chapter. And even then,
do you
like,
want to distance yourself like 6 to 12 inches from your mic? You're coming in a little hot.
Time to go back to
grown-up status. Status.
Yeah, grown-up status, baby.
So I was like, you're coming in a little hot there. I don't want to hurt anyone's ears.
Oh, you know why? I just realized it's because I have the yeah. Let me turn all this shit down. How's that?
Yeah, that's a little more.
All right, how is this?
Okay, that's a bit better. That's a bit
great.
Better.
Sorry, everyone. Very sorry, everyone. That happens sometimes. I'm not sure why. Anyways, Yeah, I mean, ideally, it would be a case of, like, you know, something like Witcher 3, someone does just the story, and then someone does all the side quests, and they say, and it's like a Famitsu-style review, where someone, and it would actually be kind of sick if you could have somebody who, like, if you did Famitsu-style, like, someone just does the story, and you have someone who's, like, most interested in the story, well, what do I get out of this if I want just the story, right? You have someone who does the, you know, like, a sort of, like, a gameplay evaluation aspect of it, someone who does all the kind of side content, and everyone kind of just, like, gets together and gives like their version of their experience of it. But like the problem is that you have such radically different people with radically different tastes. I think on the one hand, it does allow for more diverse reviews that like wouldn't end up being like a God Hand on IGN, where like apparently like a bunch of staff at IGN love God Hand. It's just that they happened to give the review to a guy who hated it.
Yeah.
And now that's IGN's opinion of God Hand, even though that's not...
It's just one guy's.
And yeah, it's like, just the guy who happened to review the game. And now everyone's... Like, IGN lives forever in infamy. Meanwhile, like, they've just done everything they can to, like, kind of distance themselves from that review, especially because a lot of the staff likes God Hand and has admitted to liking God Hand. It shows up on, like, top 100 lists for, like, PS2 games and stuff. Like, the site likes God Hand. It's just that that one review... was really negative. And so, like, I like the idea of doing a Famitsu kind of magazine style thing. There was one, a very famous one, where someone, like, really shit on Yakuza 1, and then the other two editors, like, the other two people on it were like, yeah, Mark, you're insane. You're fucking nuts. This game is incredible. What are you talking about?
And so,
like, I would actually kind of love it if you had, you know, people who all get to do their different experience, like, based on, like, do you like to 100% a game? Do you like to do everything? You know, and then someone... everyone kind of gets together for that, and maybe, like, there's, you know, you don't have to do an aggregate score. Maybe there's a score for, like, different levels of completion or different levels of experience. Like, I would actually love it if games could tell you, like, yeah, gameplay wise this is a 10 out of 10, but, like, if you're really here for the story, it's not happening for you.
Yeah, I and like, that's useful. It's because like, this is the thing, is like, because this is something like Mulgar brings up where he says, like, like, about, like, a flat hour investment of just, like, sort of, you just kind of play a game for, like, 20, 30 hours, and it's kind of, you just base your review off that. And, like, to me, it's, like, we kind of already get that content with, like, in first impressions or impressions videos or write-ups and stuff about games. And, like, I think that, like, I gotta be honest, like, in a sense, like, the first impressions and stuff, like, have some more merit than, like, a lot of these, like, consumer reviews for me. Because it's just like, here's someone who's played this game for like 4 to 5 hours, and they're like, this is just like how I'm feeling about it right now. And it's like, because like most modern fucking, like, I don't know, like, I gotta be honest with you, Miles, I don't really care a lot about like finishing games. Like, if I like a game, I'm gonna fucking finish it. But also at the same time, I'm not like someone who's gonna force myself to the end of a game I think I'm like falling off of or whatever, even if I really liked it or put a lot of time into it. Like, I got to the point of no return to Cyberpunk 2077. I probably had maybe anywhere between 1 to 3 or 4 hours of content left in the main campaign. I just didn't do it. Never went back.
I it's important for me to finish things. I think it's very important, especially because endings tend to really, like, either save or ruin something. Like, I think that there are some games where, like, the end... Ironically enough, like, for the two most recent Zelda games, it's kind of, like, an inverse where a lot of people, like, finish Breath of the Wild and, like, the ending's, like, the worst part of the game for them. And then a lot of people, like, report, like, losing steam on Tears of the Kingdom, and then that game's ending just, like, fucking nails the landing so much that a lot of people walk away feeling fucking great about the experience. Even though, like, a lot of them will be like, yeah, I wasn't too hot on, you know, on it towards the end. I wasn't really enjoying it. And then the finale happened, and it was the best fucking thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, and to an extent, like, that's actually more important, I think, to people who are only going to play one game for the rest of their fucking lives. Like that's it.
And this is another thing, too, that we have to think about, is that the people, is individuals play games differently than one another.
Right.
Even you, Miles, even you and me, we play games completely differently.
I play the same 5 games 100,000 times.
Yeah, for hours. I mean, how many hours do you think you have in Tears of the Kingdom collectively now? Like 1,000?
Well, that depends on if you count modding as hours. I personally wouldn't say that I've been playing that game the last several months. I've been booting the game up to test things the last several months. Breath of the Wild, I could certainly say I probably have like 400, 500 hours in that game. And you know, even Phantom Pain, like I think I've got like 1,400 hours or something at this point in Phantom Pain. Whereas, like, yeah, I mean, collectively, you've probably put in at most 70 into Phantom Pain, maybe 80, like across the last 9 years, eight to nine years. And there are some games that you do make that 100-hour mark, but I would probably wager that you don't even make it past the 200 mark in 99% of games.
We're pulling up Steam right now to check, because I want to know I should be able to sort by hours played. There we go. So here's what I have. So for over 100 hours on Steam, And for the record, there's probably like multiple games from my childhood and stuff on GameCube that I have well over 100 hours in. Pokemon Emerald, Platinum, I definitely have over 100 hours in. Probably Fire Red, Leaf Green, collectively over 100 hours. A lot of all the Pokemon.
I think it's different though when 100 hours of your life matters a lot less. Like unless you get hit by a
That's
bus
facts.
When you're a child, you kind of have 100 hours just to exist, just to be.
Yeah, so here it is. 250.3 hours in Monster Hunter World, goated game.
That makes sense.
219.1 hours in Dark Souls 3.
That I was about to guess either Dark Souls 1 or Dark Souls 3 has the 200 hour mark.
Dark Souls gets fucked by, well, you'll see. 148.8 hours in Kenchi.
Okay.
My goat.
That's,
my goat. 140.2 hours in Elden Ring. 121, which is the most casual one on the list, I feel. I don't even feel like I played 140 hours of Elden
Ring. It's actually funny. I played 240 hours of Elden Ring, and I don't feel like I played 240 hours of Elden Ring.
I feel like I played 30 hours of Elden Ring.
Well, I was surprised to find out that I put 300 hours into Tears of the Kingdom at launch. I was shocked. I thought it was much less than that.
Yeah, I, 121.9 hours in Dark Souls Remastered, 106.6 hours in Trails in the Sky, the first game, because I played through it twice,
right.
102.8 hours in Remnant from the Ashes, and then we get to the over 60s, which is 83.3 hours in Sekiro, 83.3 hours in Cyberpunk 2077, 81.4 hours in Dark Souls Remastered, so combined, it's 202 or 203.3 hours for Dark Souls combined. Then 63.6 hours for Trails of Cold Steel. When I replay that, it will be doubled. For over 40, 51.1 hours for Monster Hunter Rise, 49.5 hours for Pac-Man CEDX Plus.
That's a lot less than I expected. It's a lot less than I expected.
Think about it like this. The individual maps are 5-minute games at a time. So if you play a dozen games, you play for an hour.
That's a fair point.
49.2 hours in Guilty Gear Strive, 48 hours in Neo, 46.8 hours in Street Fighter VI, 42.4 hours in Trails in the Sky Second Chapter, and I'm not even halfway through the fucking game, 42.3 hours in Hades, 41 hours in BG3, 38.7 hours in Mega Man Legacy Collection 2, 38.6 hours in Sonic Frontiers, that's going to be 60 hours in a few weeks, 38.3 hours in Dead Cells, Genesis Classic Collection, Cuphead 37, Rogue Legacy 37, and maybe about a dozen more games above 20 hours, and then everything else is below 20 hours.
Yeah, like, and to be fair, my Steam list is fairly similar, but it's because I haven't played that many games on Steam in actuality. Like, a lot of, I mean, I guess I could look into it now, but I don't want to, because that would be fucking boring if both of us just read our Steam lists. Yeah, I mean,
It's just not that many games for me that really, like, that capture me for a long extended period of time.
I definitely have the opposite problem of things capture me too much, like good and bad. Like I'm still hung up on things that I hated, like not even games really, like movies and stuff. I was thinking about Lovecraft Country the other day because I started watching The Wire.
Why does something so good remind you of something so heinous?
Because the famous actor who played the father in the Lovecraft Country is a character named Omar in The Wire.
Oh, Mr. Wire.
Yeah, well, no, he's not Mr. Wire. Mr. Wire is technically McNulty, James McNulty. Can you guess his fucking ethnicity, by the way?
No.
You can't guess the ethnicity of James McNulty, Sam?
Is he black?
No, he's fucking Irish, Sam. James McNulty, are you kidding
dude,
me?
Dude, I'm fucking... Bro, I've been up since 6:45, dude. You fucking think I'm being able to fucking... McNulty?
McNulty.
How do you even fucking spell that? Shit.
I don't know. I don't fucking know. I don't know. Anyways, but he's an Irishman, and he's got the most Irish-American face I've ever seen in my entire life. Like,
is he
I can't
redhead?
Really explain
is he
it.
Ginger?
No, like, that's what's weird about it. It's just his face is so Irish-American. It's really hard to explain, but you see him and you go, that makes sense. But yeah, so The Wire, so here's what's funny about The Wire, Sam, because The Wire is up in that realm of like legendary TV, like, you know, Sopranos, Breaking Bad, and The West Wing, like, and I'm talking like truly legendary, legacy tier, prestige TV, Succession, because like something like 24 is ungodly famous. Everyone knows 24, especially from the era
but
of Tub and Watchers.
It's not like it's a not prestige TV show. Yeah,
yeah, like that was like that was a moment, that was a fad, and it was a huge moment, and it was a very defining, important moment in television, similar to like an Ally McBeal or like a Firefly. Firefly, maybe more or less, because that was kind of a cult show, but Buffy the Vampire Slayer is probably a better example. Like, these things that, like, are legendary, X-Files even, something like X-Files, like, legendary TV that is great, but they're fads. Like, whereas, like, The Sopranos is kind of still being upheld as this, like, important crown for television as a medium. It proves the power of television. So The Wire is similar to that. And like, for me, I'm kind of like... like, I'm watching The Wire, and, like, in my mind, when someone talks about one of these shows, I'm sitting here thinking, like, well, goddamn, this must be, like, this incredible, god-tier, brilliant drama fucking show. It's a fucking cop procedural. The Wire's a fucking cop procedural about stopping drugs and police officers and street toughs. And, like, it kind of makes you realize, like, the writing of the show is all that matters. It's literally, the premise is fucking irrelevant, because the fact that the fucking Wire, like this like cop procedural that's like the genre show, is on par with something like The Sopranos or Succession, which are those are prestige dramas. They're about sad, angry people sitting in a room yelling at each other. Like, and that's fucking television, man. Like, if you're fucking pretentious, that's television. Whereas The Wire, like, I'm sitting here and I'm watching it and I'm like, man, I'm so excited because I understand all the shit that's happening. I don't have to fucking read through 17 different... Do you know how hard it is to be autistic in the fucking year of prestige television where I just have to fucking read facial expressions? I don't know what the fuck... anyone's feeling. I don't know what anyone's feeling. Everyone's feeling all this bullshit. I don't understand any of it.
And I just gotta pretend like I know.
Yeah, like, dude, that's how I felt when I was watching Dave. I was like, is this a sad scene? Is this a funny scene? I can't fucking tell anything at all. Like, am I supposed to be laughing? Or is this tragic? Or what's going on here? Like,
wait, Dave?
Yeah, the fucking show about Lil Dicky. Like, oh. Like,
sorry. When I hear Dave, I think of are you familiar with the movie Dave?
Yeah.
Or about the guy who becomes the president of the United States.
Yes.
Randomly. That movie's cracked, by the way. That movie's insane. Cause the first lady marries the guy who looks exactly like her dead husband.
Yes. That's one of those premises, like the Distinguished Gentleman, the Eddie Murphy film, where it's just like that premise is so like a screenwriter is not proud of it. They did it to sell the script. I've been watching the Red Letter Media, like Friday the 13th, thing that they're putting up the reviews. They've only done one part so far, but, I've watched it like four times just out of, you know, just in the background. And there's a part where the guy who directed Friday the 13th says, like, he didn't have a premise for the film. He didn't have any idea what it was going to be about. He just put out an ad in Variety saying that, you know, that, oh, Friday the 13th, the most terrifying film of all time. And, like, seeing if someone would buy the movie based on nothing. And they did. And, like, and so, like, Dave or the Distinguished Gentleman, like, that is the kind of premise that comes from, like, who wants to buy this? I'm just going to tell you the idea. Do you want to buy it? Yes or no?
Yeah. And also, by the way, real quick, speaking of movies, yesterday I saw The Wolf of Wall Street for the first time ever.
Why do I get a feeling you love that film already?
Miles, that is the most crack house core movie I've ever seen. I can't fucking believe it, dude. I was blown away by the level of debaucherous crackery in that movie, dude.
Like the midget tossing scene?
The midget tossing scene. No, not the midget tossing scene. The midget discussion scene of paying for them.
Yes.
And like, there's so many great scenes in this movie. About what is it, Matthew Broderick, right? Or Matthew McConaughey? Matthew McConaughey early in the movie.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, yeah.
Where he's talking about he's like, got to jerk off. Yeah, you gotta fucking jerk off. You gotta drink fucking. You gotta snort cocaine to heighten your senses.
Yeah,
like this shit is fucking awesome. It's 3 hours and it flies by. You're wrapped into the whole thing, dude.
All Martin Scorsese movies move pretty quickly. I mean, I've heard The Irishman is kind of dragging. It's fucking Knuckles. Like I don't know much about that, but like all of his movies are super long, and all of them feel way less than the length that they are.
Top five. Favorite movie of mine, I think.
Yeah, I was about to say,
I think it's now the fifth one, bro. It's like Wolf, like Mad Max Fury Road, like Reservoir Dogs, of course. Probably like Scott Pilgrim still. I still enjoy Scott Pilgrim. I like the Scott Pilgrim movie for different reasons than when I liked it when I was growing up.
See, because I thought you were going to say Baby Driver.
I like Baby Driver, but like, I don't love Baby Driver. I really, really like Baby Driver. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, it's funny because
I don't have the fire for Baby Driver.
Only have the fire for Baby Driver because it fits my philosophy that stories are stupid and who gives a shit? Like, who gives a fuck about stories, Sam? I mean, everyone does, but I don't care.
Because you know what it is to me? I feel like, to me, like, Mad Max Fury Road is, like, that piece in my, like, top five, like, movies. Loved. Like, that I love. And, like, I don't know what the fifth one is. Probably Kill Bill or something. I really like Kill Bill. I really like Kill Bill Volume 1. Volume 2 is good, but only Volume 2 is only particularly... Volume 2 is at its best when it's watched immediately after Part 1.
After Volume 1, yeah.
Feature.
Yeah, which is clearly kind of how it was intended. Yeah, I mean, my top 10 movies or my top 5 movies, like, it's always kind of whatever. I mean, like, it's funny that Schindler's List is next to Evil Dead 2. Like, that's really funny. But yeah, like in most cases, I mean, Baby Driver is probably top five just because like that's like my editing film. Like, I think that,
I mean, it's an awesome movie. It's fucking,
yeah,
awesome.
I think that Schindler's
awesome.
List is my favorite like story film. Like, that's like my emotional film, where like the feelings of it and like the direction of it, like, I really care about. Evil Dead 2 is probably like my favorite like watching experience. Like, I love sitting down and watching Evil Dead 2 and just having a good time with this fucking creative. Like, all the creative scenarios are awesome. And then I really love, like, just the editing of Baby Driver. Like, just being in that movie for 2 hours and just, like, the energy of it and the vibes of it. And especially, like, it's like the only other thing besides JoJo that can get me to listen to music. Like, so that's a really fun aspect of it. But yeah, I mean, the other two movies, this is probably insane. I'm actually going to say 1959 Sleeping Beauty. The fucking Disney film is probably up there. And then I'd say Angel's Egg. Is number five probably. Okay. Yeah, those are like just how I'm feeling. Like, there's something about both those movies where I just really love sitting down with them and just like it's so nice to just be with craft for a while. Yeah, I would definitely put like probably Toy Story like OG or Ratatouille.
I love Toy Story 1 and 2 and
8 and 3, obviously.
I'd put like the all the ones I grew up with: Toy Story 1 and 2, Monsters Inc., Finding Nemo, Incredibles. Like,
Incredibles is really good.
Games.
Yeah, Toy Story 4, the best one. We're not doing a Pixar thing today. We're not doing it. You know what? No, I'm doing a Pixar thing today.
No, fuck you.
No, because you know what I was thinking about in the shower.
No, we're not doing this. What? Oh, jeez. Thinking about Pixar in the shower?
I was not thinking about Pixar in the shower. I was thinking about my family coming home for Thanksgiving in the shower, right? And in particular, like, having to have discussions about, like, movies and media and stuff with people.
You gotta talk about Elemental.
Yeah, like, I'm definitely gonna have to talk about Elemental with, like, my family. And I'm always very interested in interacting with, you know, some of my family members because their movie taste is very different from mine. But, like, I'm always kind of fascinated by it because, like, I think that they can appreciate craft as much as me, but like I think that they also really just like a good, like, tight screenplay like I do too. But I don't know if they get the same like level of anger that I do at like just a fucking failure. Like, and I'm always curious about, I'm truly curious about this because like I liked Elemental a lot because it's, the script is so thin and all the dialogue is so bad, and it's just like, it's just clearly someone's like passion project and their like animation just coming to life, and like all, it's almost adorable how inept certain aspects of that film is. It's the most like, but I was comparing it to Lightyear, where Lightyear is trying so fucking hard to like be like that bitch, like that Pixar movie bitch, where like it wants to have like the you know, oh, our hero's got to learn hard lessons like Incredibles and Ratatouille, and like it wants to, you know, like it's dramatic and there's all sorts of fucking, and it's just like, it's just a complete fucking failure because Buzz Lightyear's an asshole and he fucking fails at everything, and a bunch of people have to mansplain him through the entire film. And like I've just been thinking about like there's got to be someone out there who just likes a boring piece of garbage movie like fucking Lightyear, because at least the script is decent, you know?
I fucking hate thinking about Lightyear, bro. I fucking hate it, dude. I hate this shit. I hate how we keep fucking coming back.
It's more a case of what I want to highlight with this one is not Lightyear in particular. It just got me thinking about like, because we're always talking about how everyone's very different and everyone's enjoying things from a different way. Like even you and I, that's part of the friction of the show, the conflict of certain episodes of Crack House, debating ghost stories and shit like that. Like, because you know, with movies, I think you're just very much, did I have a good time? Yes or no. Was I fucking let down by the explosion at the end of at the middle of Oppenheimer? Yes or no? You know, whereas like I ended up really liking Oppenheimer because of the editing and like the speed of it, the pace of it. Like I was just very riveted by how it moved. So everyone kind of watches movies in very different ways, but like truly someone must fucking sit in the theater and just watch a piece of garbage like Lightyear that has like no emotional anything and sucks ass and likes it more than Elemental because like the dialogue is better or some crap. Like just like, even though like one makes you feel something and then the other one doesn't, but like the dialogue's better. And what really got me thinking about this today was that I watched The Amazing Digital Circus, the new pilot that everyone's raving about. One of these, like, every couple years, like, an internet pilot comes out and everyone goes nuts over it.
Oh, like Bravest Warriors or Hazbin Hotel or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, those are definitely the two.
Can I get that name one more time?
The Amazing Digital Circus.
What the fuck? You keep talking about it. I just wanted to see what it was.
Yeah, I'll keep talking about it. So first of all, I watched this pilot, right? And I get to the end of the fucking pilot, because one of the voice actors is bugging me the whole time. Not that his performance is bad, but because I know his voice. I'm like, I know this guy. Sam, do you remember the Autarch of Flame?
Holy shit, he's in it?
He's in it. Bro. He's in it. He's a voice actor. And by the way, he's very good. Dude, I sent you back to the fucking past to play the shitty games that suck ass.
He's gonna take you back to the past.
Like, I, when I saw that name, I was like, oh my god, I haven't thought about him in 10 years. Like, it would be like if Shippage came up in the credits, right?
Jesus Christ. Autarch of Flame.
He's like fucking 38 now, or I don't know how old he is, but like, because he was in high school, like around the time I was in high school. I think he was a senior in high school and I was a freshman. So he's like only 4 years older than us, and he's a fucking voice actor in The Amazing Digital Circus. Meanwhile,
I'm
we're
like
talking
trying
about
to like look him up and like find him online.
His name is Alex Rochen, R-O-C-H-E-N. Yeah, this is real fucking riveting. Listen to Sam fucking click away on his fucking keyboard.
Like, fucking,
why do you need a fucking visual aid on this guy? I'm not even talking about. I'm talking about The Amazing Digital Circus. Why you fucking gotta look at
well,
shit
no,
up
because,
right now?
Yeah, because you just fucking brought up the Autarch of fucking Flame, and I just wanted to remember what fucking videos he fucking made, because it's been a while. He was a top 10 guy, right?
Yeah, he was your top 10 guy. I could have told you that shit if you just asked me.
I knew he was a fucking top 10 guy, but I wanted to know what fucking top 10 videos he made.
He's made top 10 videos about everything. Why the fuck do you care? Why do you give a shit?
Yeah, but I want to know if you had any, like, specific ones that I remembered watching.
No,
that
you
I could
don't.
Have reminisced about.
They're all the same shit, Sam. Fuck you.
Oh, fuck off.
How about you fucking die in a hole, Sam? Go fuck yourself.
Fuck you.
Hey, fuck you.
Ha ha ha! This show's in a fucking death knell. Anyways, this fucking shitty circus,
the amazing elephant dung circus, the amazing elephant diarrhea dump in your ear circus. No, I'm implying that I think it's bad. I don't think it's bad at all. The other notable thing is that one of the characters, like, has this, like, pitched-down voice, and I was like, I don't recognize this person at all. It's fucking Elsie Lovelock, who used to do, like, covers, and she had a very famous cover of fucking Metal Gear Solid 3's main theme, Snake Eater, that I used to listen to a lot in high school. So I was like, okay, all right, I know these fucking guys. They're all, like, gamer people that I used to watch, like fucking Autark of Flame, who, by the way, does a really great job, except for one line where his Canadian accent slips through, and it's really obvious. But he does a great job. He very much disappears into the role. I was thinking a lot about it as I was watching it, like, just the appeals of certain things, right? Like, and this is how I got onto the subject of Lightyear, as well as Lovecraft Country, like, why certain things end up getting, like, kind of attention. Because, I guess to circle back to The Wire very briefly, just to
No, that's fine.
Yeah. Wire's incredible. But Omar in The Wire is the dad in Lovecraft Country, and both of them play, like, troubled or, like, sort of, like, controversial gay black men. But, like, one of them feels like a very authentic, like, for the time, edgy character. And then the Lovecraft Country one is, like, clearly, like, some bitch in the fucking writer's room or in the casting who's like, dude, we have a black gay character. We have to cast Omar. Now, that's a stunt. Like, and it's like, that's a show written by fans of other shows. Like, and so that kind of shit is like only you can only like that if you're like a TV watcher who does the seasonal TV thing where you watch every like new show that's coming out. I feel this way about certain animes. There are certain animes that are only like you're only going to like this for the season.
That's by the way, for the record, that's 95% of anime that comes out is shit that is only worth really truly worthwhile than this fucking season.
Yeah. And like, and it's good to like live it up and enjoy it while it's around. Like, everyone's really into Frieren right now, and I really hope that that continues, but it's probably not going to get a second season, and you're probably going to forget about it.
As I've gotten a bit older and stuff, I feel like I can, while I don't appreciate it personally, I can understand and respect, like, zeitgeist shows a bit, and, like, watching
I have no problem with zeitgeist shows, not at all, but, like, I think that my problem with zeitgeist anime in particular is that a lot of anime have great stories that are never going to be finished in the animated version.
That's my problem, and that's kind of why I don't really watch anime anymore, is because it's either, here's the deal, you're either not going to get a second season, the quality's going to fucking fall off, and you're just going to have to fucking wait forever to get anywhere. When is the best part of a great manga that's like...
It's at the end.
That's... Yeah, or the end or the middle, most of the part, is like... Takes like, you know, like... You know, it's not until like... Fucking look at Chainsaw Man. Chainsaw Man's fucking awesome. Anime was super well received, super popular. The first third of Chainsaw Man's the weakest part.
Yeah, it's literally the worst part of the series. And like, that's not bad. Like, you could do worse, obviously. But, like, I expected people to think Chainsaw Man was, like, overhyped. Because those first three parts, like, those first, like, 30 chapters are just not as great as what comes after. Something like Lovecraft Country, like, you definitely get the feeling that it was written by people who want to make TV, as opposed to people who have, like, really important or, like, relevant stories to tell, right? The Amazing Digital Circus is... great to good. I struggle to like it's good great to good.
You mean?
No,
you mean,
it's great. It's great to good. I don't know where I'm sitting. Because I think I'm sitting on great. Like normally good to great, you're like, I think it might be great, but I'm gonna play it on the safe side and say it's good. I'm the opposite. I think it might be great, but I'm gonna play it on the safe side. Or I think it might be great, but I'm not sure if I really think it's great. So I'm gonna say it's just good. No, that's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is that it's probably great.
What are your issues with it? What are your problems?
It's probably great, but I have problems with it. And like my problem, so animation's excellent, sound design excellent, music's fucking excellent. voice acting's excellent. Everyone does a good ass job. The problem with it, though,
is
that
the writing.
Well, it's not the writing. It's the dialogue in particular.
Oh, okay.
And the dialogue, because the writing isn't bad. It's very, like, it's setting up a lot of adequate mysteries. You get a sense of who all the characters are. But it does have big, like, Newgrounds animator. Like, you remember Sea Students by Animated James?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, I love Sea Students.
I like Sea Students as well.
Yeah, no, Sea Students, Smash Tasm is a good example. Like, especially Brawl Smash Tasm, like that fucking awful era of Smash Tasm. Like, pre-Hellbender, like, pre-Smiling Friends, like, Psychic Pebbles pilots, like, Hellbenders, where, like, the writing is, like, I can't really explain it. The writing is, like, it's people saying exactly how they feel and exactly what is, what is going on for the sake of comedy. Like, I really struggle to explain. Like, the comedy would be someone like, I'm so mad that I'm pointing at you! That's how mad I am! That's, like, the joke is, like, that they're saying the obvious in a way that is inelegant. Like, it's not a joke. It's just this, like, weird thing that the internet really loves nowadays. Like this, like,
it's very, like, Marvel adjacent humor.
It's not even self-aware. It's self-aware of what isn't being said. Yeah. Like, of the fact that this line, it could be good with some effort, but we're not going to do that. Instead, we're just going to make the humor about how little effort was put into the line, right? Like, I just can't explain it. Like, if there's a, this is so hard because it's so specific. So, for example, characters who, like, very specifically deny something that's clearly obvious, like, obviously going to be a part of the story, where they're like, well, it's not like, you know, you might be thinking about escaping the digital circus, but it's not like there's a glaring red door that says exit. Surely you didn't see that. Like, you know, do you know what I mean? Where it's just like, oh yeah, oh man, I'm really, I fell out of my chair on that one. Oh man, yeah, you got the whole gang rolling with that line. Yeah, like, I can't explain it, but, like, oh, you know, another good one? Instead of a character, like, being in physical pain and, like, acting out physical pain, they'll be like, I'm in so much pain right now! Like, that's the worst example, and of course that's in the show, too. But the animation is, like, fucking god tier for, like, a CG cartoon, produced by a bunch of internet people. Like, I truly didn't think you could get something that looked that good, like, just with a, like, just with a, such a small team. Because it's only a team of, like, 20, 30 people, like,
you know. I was skipping around a bit. It's pretty,
it looks great
looking.
Yeah, it looks great. And character designs are great. But, like, the other thing about it is it's an internet fandom show. All the designs are made to be drawn in as many art styles as humanly possible. All the character names are like so iconic they could only belong to this story, which is, that's a really big, like, internet thing nowadays. I can't really explain this very well, but
what are the characters' names in this show?
So there's Kane, and a lot of these are, like, so, like uncool names to me. Like, oh, the all-powerful guy is named Kane, C-A-I-N-E. Oh my god, what a cool name. Like, that's one of the lame aspects of the show. Like, I know I'm focusing only on the negative aspects of it because I thought it was very good, but there's a lot of, like, the negative aspects are so specific to me that I, like, notice them.
Yeah, because you're like a writer by trade. You're like a writer by trade, so you, like, are specifically attuned to all this shit.
And also just to the flavors of things that get made and by who. Like, especially when you've met a lot of people who have their pilot and they'll tell you what their pilot is. When you hear what someone's pilot is, you know immediately who they are as a person. You know instantly who they are. And, like, this is, like, the most internet pilot I think I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, you watch Smiling Friends, right? And Smiling Friends, like, fits so perfectly into Adult Swim. Like, that does not feel like an internet pilot, even though it kind of is. Yeah, like, it's such, that's a really interesting show because, like, I was comparing it to the Amazing Digital Circus, and, like, that show really does feel like it was written by a fucking writer's room in Hollywood. Even though it's written by, obviously, you know, two kind of internet comedian personalities. And even that pilot is very, like, well written and very television-esque.
The pilot is the most like normal episode of the show, probably, in terms of just like storytelling act 1, 2, 3 structure type stuff. A plot,
yeah, which
B plot.
That's what you want for a pilot. You want to show them that you actually know how to write a fucking episode.
And then they just go crazy with all the other episodes. Fucking love Smiling Friends so goddamn much.
I'm not crazy about Smiling Friends, but like that show has my respect. That show has my like highest utmost respect. Absolutely.
Please tell me you've at least watched Smiling Friends Go to Brazil, the special episode.
Oh my god, no, I actually haven't. I need to. I'm sorry.
Don't look up anything. Just watch it. It's 11 minutes long.
Oh,
just
sure.
Watch
yeah,
the I'll, fucking episode.
I watched up to the Halloween episode, and I liked what I watched, but I remember just being like, yeah, you know, I get it. I like the nihilism episode, the Frowning Friends, or what was it, Frowning Pals?
Oh, yeah, the Frowning
Friends. Yeah, I like that episode a lot. That one's really funny. Yeah, like, I'm not, like, a fan of it, but I did enjoy my time with the show. And I'm not gonna shit talk it. I have nothing negative to say about Smiling Friends whatsoever, which is the highest fucking praise for something that I don't absolutely adore.
Like, I have nothing negative to say.
like, I didn't love it, and I have no problems with it. That's great. That's truly a rare Miles review. The Amazing Digital Circus is clearly written by someone who has written for the internet almost exclusively. Just a lot of the dialogue, how obvious everyone is and how obvious everything is, like the ways in which people talk and just really like lampshade the writing instead of just like being authentic about it. It's kind of a very nervous, like, oh god, the internet's going to tear this apart because that's what they do kind of situation. That's the vibe you get from it. Every line is too long. It's the opening cutscene of Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, but in dialogue form.
Oh my god.
And the major issue is like the show, when people are not acting and when things are not happening, it's literally everyone standing in a circle talking at each other and just saying obvious things like in their one note personalities, right? Like, yeah. So you have like the very depressive person who's like, yeah, I don't care what's going on. I'm just going to go home and sulk. And then the crazy one who's like, hey, did anyone hear a duck quacking? There was no duck quacking in the background. Like, just everyone just does their thing and is exactly, you get the fandom version of that character in episode one, as opposed to like the full-fledged, like complex, oh, I want to know who this guy is version of that character in episode one. You get the version of the character in episode one that people draw fan art of and that people like ship and heighten the personalities of, like where they're all super one note and they have no depth and they're all boring, like to start off. But their personalities are so big that like they're fun to see for now.
Yeah.
But like the characterization is already at like the late stage writing stage where like the entire fandom just has, it's sort of like how like people's idea of Ryuk as a character is he loves apples. Like that's like what fans of like Death Note who like do stuff with the Death Note characters think of Ryuk. Oh, he's the one who loves apples. He loves apples so much. He's obsessed with apples. Like, and of course he is. That's a part of the character. Yeah, that's a part of the character. But like, there's also he's a trickster. He, you know, he's very insular and self-interested and self-motivated. And he is able to he has no ego. He knows how fucking great he is and that he's in control and he's not going to demonstrate it. He's not going to show it. He's going to let things play out because he's bored. Right. And so like that kind of, no one ever plays with the idea of like Ryuk as a fun mastermind. They always play him as like a bimbo who likes apples. And that's kind of like what fandoms do. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's part of what makes them engaging is having like one trait that like fans can latch onto and fucking headcanon the shit out of. But like, yeah, all the characters are already kind of at that stage now, and I'm kind of like, god.
And like, that's the thing, because here's my problem with like these types of pilots and why like I don't get that excited. It's like, okay, cool, yeah, the Amazing Digital Circus, it's awesome, can't wait for the next episode.
It's gonna come out
next
in 2 years.
Two, 3 years from now. And it's like, and then you know what, and then after that you're gonna do a fucking spinoff for no fucking reason.
Yeah.
And that's going to be your new fucking thing. And that's going to take fucking 12 months.
Well, like, it's like how Hazbin Hotel got picked up and it's been like 4 years and we haven't heard anything about it. Another really fun one is like Hell of a Boss is onto its like second season, but apparently they just had to fucking scrap an entire episode like that. I'm sure that they worked, you know, fucking 900 years on. They just had to get rid of it because of some legal nonsense. And so it's shit like that where like in a television, in a proper television network, having an episode that has to get pulled, you still have a 21 episode, you know, order or whatever. Whereas like when you are earning the money back to make the next episode, like shit like that happens. So the Amazing Digital Circus episode 2 is going to come out in a year and a half. And by that point, I'm going to be too much older to care. And my sensibilities are going to be completely different.
It's like, I'm going to be like fucking over it. You know, it's like,
yeah, like that's how I always feel about these sorts of things. And But I think one of the things I really want to talk about with the Amazing Digital Circus is names. And just like the way that internet people name their characters versus the way the rest of the fucking planet names their characters. Because I'm sorry.
So we heard Kane. I want to hear a few others.
I just need to say up front, the two people who suck the hardest at naming things are trans women who are terminally online and terminally online pilot writers. Those are the two things. Normal trans women will fucking name themselves something like, you know, Jessica, Emma, Robin, right? Like fucking normal names. But fucking terminally online ones will be like, yeah, my name is Onyx Crystal. Amity. Like.
Yeah, dude.
The most like porn star ass porn star names. Yeah, like they pick like, again, they pick names that are not just feminine, the most overtly excessively feminine non-normal names possible. I mean, it is truly the name that someone would give themselves if they could give themselves a name. The famous joke from 30 Rock, it's like, we let our own son name himself. Isn't that right, Spider-Man? Like, it was a great joke, by the way. And like that's the same energy. Like a trans guys don't fucking transition to name themselves Spider-Man. Like it's such an oddly
or
specific
Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, like imagine
or
if
Bane.
You got to admit though, like if a trans guy transitioned and like their dead name was like Emma, and then he chose Bruce Wayne, like that would be sick as fuck. You have to admit.
Yeah, that's pretty dope.
That would be kind of dope. So I guess what I'm trying to say is like if you're gonna transition or you're gonna pick a name, pick like a fucking badass name instead of a whore's name, instead of name of a fucking whore. Name yourself Chitara. I don't give a shit. Like just don't pick Roxanne, okay? No one's named Roxanne.
Roxy. You don't love for Roxy.
Oh no, I show my love for Roxy by putting $5 in her snatch. Like fucking don't name yourself Roxy, you fucking whore.
and then so there's Kane. And then what about the other pilot writers? I want to hear about
the other pilot names.
And other fucked up pilot names.
Okay, so the other characters in the Amazing Digital Circus is Jax. And like Jax is, I don't know, J-A-C-K-S or J-A-X. It doesn't matter. It's a super internet name because it's really easy to remember. And it's easy for it to belong to that show, right?
Yeah.
Like for everyone to be like, yeah, I really love Jax. Like such an easy name to belong to that. And that's what a lot of these shows kind of do, especially with their protagonists or their like most popular characters. And like everything about that character's design, to his demeanor, is like meant to be. That character will be like an internet daddy for like fucking losers, like for pathetic women who hate themselves because he's a bully and like he's smug and he's like got like a very slender, sickly design, like very Tumblr sexy man. But he's like a bunny, so that also helps. Very super Tumblr sexy man, like pathetic suburban white girls who have fantasies of being abused by their partners. Like that's they're shipping Jax already. They're already headcanoning themselves alongside Jax.
Good lord. All right. Yeah, Kane
and
is
then
Jax.
The main character has the worst name in my opion. It's Pomni.
Pomni?
P-O-M-N-I.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And so the thing is, I saw that name, and Pomni is one of these names that, like, first of all, is so iconic because it belongs to the show. But the reason it belongs to the show is that it's a bad name.
It's stupid.
Yeah. Like, I was thinking about this.
It doesn't even sound like a real name.
But here's the thing, and this is where I was like, oh my god, you can't do this. Someone pointed out that Pomni might be the Russian word for remember, and like, so like, obviously, if that's true, there's a symbolic element to it. Like, oh, she has to remember who she was or something like that. And I'm sitting there like that is the ultimate hackery. To name your character, that is a level of hackery that like, I'm just going to say up front, because I have this temptation all the time. Naming a character something that is like a meaningful word in another language, it's very tempting to do it. But do it within reason. Like, do it in a way that sounds like it might be a good name and a good word.
Yeah, and do it with reason, or do it in a way
that is obviously more a subtle. Word.
Or is like, or do it in a way that's like more subtle or something, you know?
Yeah, like there are some names that are so rare that you're like, oh, a writer named this character. Like from the movie Censor, the character Enid, like that is such a writer name, Enid. Like, yeah. No one has ever been named Enid before Enid. Or since in anything but a story.
There are zero Enids in the
in your area.
States.
Yeah. But like, yeah, Pomni is such a like, that's such a terrible name. And I was discussing this with a friend of mine like months ago, even, where like there is a difference between a good iconic name and a bad iconic name. Like Link is a perfect iconic name.
Yeah.
And it's because Link is a name. It's a shortened version of Lincoln. And so like you're kind of accustomed to the idea of someone saying the name Link,
Abraham
and it being
Link.
A Link. Yeah, yeah, like people will shorten Lincoln to Link.
Old President Link.
Old President Link, baby. I would come up with a Zelda joke, but I can't come up with one that isn't fucking A-tier hack fraudery, like he breaks pots. Like I just can't do it.
Our last line of defense will be Abraham. Just him getting shot in the head.
Do 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 do. It's a bunch of like black people gathered. Like instead of Zoni, it's a bunch of black people gathered together, like talking about civil rights. And then a big white guy comes in. He goes, "Don't look away. Witness the birth of a nation."
And then they all shoot him with their divine beast.
Their divine beast lasers. Yeah,
and then Calamity Whitey fucking dies.
Calamity Honky.
Oh, fucking man, dude.
But yeah, like,
Pomni
is a bad name. It's a really
Pomni
bad
sucks.
Name.
That name sucks.
And again, like, the fact that it's like, you can name someone after a word. Link is a fucking word. But, like, I don't know, there's a subtle difference between a name that is, like, made up and sucks, and a name that's made up and good. Like,
yeah.
And you can kind of feel it. Like, this happens with games a lot, especially Japanese games, but, like, Marth, great name.
Yeah, Marth's
kind
sick.
Of weird, but great, right?
Yeah, I've never met a Marth before, but like, I wouldn't be shocked if I met a Marth either.
I assume that his name is supposed to be Mars, but like,
or Mark, dude. Imagine if he was Mark, bro.
Prince Mark, yeah,
Prince Mark and
Mark's the name of the kind of guy who would like piss between a dollar, but behind a Dollar Tree. You know what I'm saying? Like, one of those names.
Yeah, definitely.
It's the name of someone who might be unhinged. But yeah, like Samus is not a real name as far as I can tell, but like something about Samus just sounds like a real name. Just sounds like a real ass name.
And
Kratos.
Then you got like Kirby.
Kirby,
which is
yeah,
like
which
uncommon
is...
enough.
Yeah.
A nice uncommon name. You ever once in a while you run into a Kirby, you know?
Yeah. Some names, I'll admit, are only good from conditioning. Like, Donkey Kong is an objectively bad name.
But DK is good.
Yeah, DK is very good. Diddy, like Diddy Kong is great because Diddy is like a tune, like nice and uncommon kind of name. Uncommon names are also really good. I mentioned Kratos earlier.
Yeah, Kratos is a good, great name.
Kratos is great. And I'm sure that means something in Greek, but like either way, it's a great choice for that character.
It just slides right in. You're like, yeah, fits in right with a Greek pantheon, you know, Zeus and Hades and Kratos.
It sounds like he belongs in this story. Even when they move to Norse mythology, Kratos doesn't feel like
too out of place either. I agree.
Yeah, that name doesn't feel too out of place. I will say like Foe from Bomb Rush Cyberpunk is a pretty great name.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah, that's pretty perfect for that character.
Yeah, Foe is a really good name.
I like him.
Chai, great name.
Oh, Chai's fucking awesome. Dude, all the characters, because they're all named after, like, coffee and stuff.
But Chai is the best one, like, because Peppermint is decent. Macaron,
Corsica,
not great.
Corsica goated.
Corsica is a great name. Corsica is a great name. But, like, yeah, Macaron, not great.
Yeah, Macaron's a little, we're pushing it a little bit there.
You're pushing that one. Kale is a really good name,
though. I also
like
Mimosa. Mimosa's a great name, too.
Mimosa's a perfect name, yeah. Because that's more of a drink. Yeah, I really like Chai as a protagonist name. That one's pretty brilliant. And it's a T. Like, so again, there is an art to this sort of, like, uncommon name or just the name of a word. Stolen valor, but
I will say, like, one of my favorite things in media is when characters have a naming scheme. Like in Reservoir Dogs, they're all named after colors.
Yeah.
Or they're all named after coffee or caffeinated drinks in
Hi-Fi Rush.
I love that. I don't know. That shit gets me going, bro. That shit just gets me fucking jacked up. Cause you know why? It helps me remember the characters. Like,
yes, yes. Well, we've admitted before we're all bad at names. We're all terrible at names, especially of like fictional characters. Yeah, like a good naming scheme is really, it just helps a lot, you know. Not enough series is like have the premises that allow you to have like a naming scheme that kind of fits the story. Kill Bill, obviously, because like it's an elite squad, or like Reservoir Dogs because it's a heist squad where you're not supposed to know the other person's name. Similar,
yeah, and also
Baby
like
Driver as
Top
well.
Gun's good at it too because of the call signs.
Yeah, call sign military culture, but. Yeah, and then something like Hi-Fi Rush, like you might not realize it's happening until you meet your third character with a caffeinated drink name, and you're like, oh, okay, I see.
Yeah, I see what they're doing. God, that game is fucking good, Miles.
It's really good.
That game is so good.
I hope it's one of these games where like I think the flaws of the combat system are so like specific to it that like the less you like action games, the better that game is. It's a bizarre example. I think the only other game I can say this for is Metal Gear Rising, where the less of a fucking loser you are about action games, where like this garbage matters to you, like the better that game is.
Yeah, because it's like just fucking.
Because it's just 6 hours of good time, dude.
It's 6 hours. It's fucking awesome. It's like super polished, very high quality. The combat is great. It is great.
It's very fucking good.
On beat is fucking really fun.
The combat issues are things that are like, again, so specific to like, I know how this has functioned in like the top tippy best games of this genre that.
What were your core issues with the combat in it?
The fact that like directional, like Chai, like I think the major problems are like a lot of the tools don't control space very well. So like there's a really good like attack that like it's supposed to like pull enemies towards you. It's when he like throws his guitar and like it kind of spirals and comes back
to him. Oh, yeah. I've like very rarely ever used that attack.
Yeah, it doesn't bring enemies close enough. Another one is that like even though you're playing on beat, enemies for some reason have like really weird gravity where they can fall out of your combos. So like if you're keeping an enemy in the air, even though everything's on beat and everything should function right, sometimes they'll just like kind of fall out of the combo just because gravity got to him enough. And like it's the kind of thing where like when you're making a rhythm game combat system, that just shouldn't happen. Like this level of consistency, that level of consistency should literally be the norm, because I know how the rhythm of combat is supposed to go, quite literally. So that's another one. There's a couple of attacks that, like, have a really poor, like directional element to them. And they're very specific attacks. The Kamehameha attack, enemies fall directly below it when they fall out of your combo instead of, like, kind of hanging enough to get hit by the attack. So you can, like, finish out the combo and just miss, even though the enemy was, like, directly in front of you before, but they fell out so that you could finish the combo, and then they happen to fall directly below the beam. Like, it's really weird, and it seems to happen to both large and small enemies. I think the last one that I have is just the lack of a lock-on is just not a very good thing for that game in particular, because you can't miss a beat. You literally can't. So, like, being able to, like, be guaranteeing that you're keeping your combo up by always hitting exactly what you want is super duper important in that game in particular, because you can't stop to chase the enemy, because then your fucking combo drops and you lose your fucking beat meter. So just, like, things like that that are so, like, so minuscule if you're just having fun and you're not going for high scores, that kind of gets to me. I really don't want to diminish what is there by saying those kinds of things. I just, like, there's a reason, like, I personally will never go back and try and get all S ranks on that game, even though I think the game is really fucking tight and great, and I played it for, I think, 60 hours, like,
Damn, you put a lot of time into it.
I only put 30 hours in, sorry. But still, 30 hours for a 6-hour game is really good. Yeah, like, just little things like that that make it, like, because I would love to go back and do, like, a big S rank sweep of the game, and I can't justify it because some bullshit might happen that just ruins my score, and that's not how you want to feel about a game like that.
Although I think getting S ranks in that game is pretty doable.
It's pretty easy. It's actually not too tough. The bigger, harder part is getting, like, the perfect S, like, across the entire stage, because if you just want to get your good S rank, that's one thing, but if you want to get S plus star, like, that's where it gets really annoying, especially, like, the fact that, like, if you fail a level, you know, or if you fail a battle, that's it, you just got to restart the chapter, you got no choice. Like, it's very similar to Bayonetta, where it's just really harsh, as opposed to, like, a DMC tough. Where, like, you don't have to get S ranks on every fucking fight to get an S at the end of the stage.
Yeah, you just gotta perform at a high enough level.
Yeah. And it makes sense because not every combat scenario is going to have enemies last long enough to get, like, a triple S, like, depending on the enemy type. Like, sometimes they're just gonna die too fast.
Yeah. It's so funny, dude. Now that I'm working, I don't have any time for games anymore. It's, like, so sad. I game, like, maybe, like, 5 hours a week, if that. What a fucking tragedy. What a fucking Greek tragedy, bro.
I think the thing about, because I'll get honest. We're an hour into the episode. I'm definitely worried about, like, what the future of Crackcast is going to be like now that we're both working men. And to be fair, I have enough downtime with work because it's a project to project thing for the time being that, like, I know I can still get into some tomfoolery and some hijinks, but, like, when we're both working, like, and we both work pretty long hours, like,
yeah,
like, what are we going to bring to the table? It's the first time I've ever felt like, shit, we have to do this show this week. I got nothing.
It's like one of these fucking things where it's like, All I do is, like, go and do my fucking job. Like, I go and do my job and I fucking go home and I sit on my balcony and I fucking smoke weed, contemplate life, and play Sonic Frontiers for an hour and go to bed. Like,
the other big problem too is, like, we can't talk about our work online anymore without, like,
getting ourselves into some trouble anymore.
Yeah, like, pizza delivery is a very different thing. Like, we have such specific jobs that also require us to kind of keep our noses clean, so to speak. And so the only way to do that is to have, like, a relative level of plausible deniability to some of the bullshit that we've said on this fucking show. That's not me in that video. That guy.
Because, I mean, here's the deal. I have really no problem with any of the shit we said on Crack Guys. I don't think any of the shit we said on Crack Guys is, like, so, so heinous or anything. Because it's
all fun.
It's all stupid. It's all fucking dumb.
I think like, it's an issue of, like, that's the case for us and our very small audience. But, like, I don't know what, like, someone at a company who has, like, standards and practices to worry about might think.
Yeah. Because
that's the problem.
Because, yeah, like, yeah, I totally foresee because like yeah I don't need to talk about what I do for work, nor do I really necessarily fucking want to do it. I mean, honestly, I come on fucking Crack House just to fucking hang out with you, Miles. Like yeah. we just fucking chat and shoot the shit and stuff.
That's what's fun about the show. I think it's just the fact that like it is a good chance for us to kind of check in. But I also kind of want to bring it each week. I want to make sure that people feel like they're not wasting their fucking time with this episode, even though I rambled the entire, cause I didn't, I didn't fucking sleep at all, this last like week, which is fine. It was my choice to work that hard, but yeah, like me trying to sum up the amazing digital circus, like dialogue, that should have taken me 30 seconds and it took me 2 fucking minutes cause I just couldn't put the words together.
No, yeah, I had a fucking long day too, because I mean, I've been up since fucking 6:35, I think, today, and I've just been like...
The other problem is that I do really boring shit, like, I'm sorry, modding Tears of the Kingdom is just not cool, it's just not cool.
That's the thing, I'll do, like, one thing a night that's, like, maybe interesting. Like, the other night I watched the lecture that our friend of the show, Tom, sent me about, like, the truth about food from Dr. Katz.
S-U-N-Y.
Good fucking lecture. Great fucking lecture. And it's only like an hour long, too. Totally worth watching. But like, it's like, all right, I watched that. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going to bed now. It's 11:30. Like,
you know what, Sam? I have beef with you. I got some beef that I want to talk about. That I want to
squash. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Because you said something You said something last week that has like, it's stuck to me. Like,
did I say something that rubbed you the wrong way?
Not really rub me the wrong way. Like, this is all fun and games. Don't worry. Like, I'm not actually mad at you.
I know, but I gotta know what it is, that because I don't want Miles to mauled, bro. That's the last thing I want you to do is for you to mauled over some bullshit I said completely flippantly.
Yeah, no, it was more of like an insinuation of when you were like, how are you gonna find more YouTube videos now that you've like culled your YouTube thing? Like, this was one of these moments where I got unnaturally, like, unreasonably like mad about it, where it's like, why the fuck do you think I want to be on fucking YouTube watching fucking YouTube videos, Sam? What the fuck? I got better shit to do, Sam, than fucking watch a bunch of shit. Like, it was one of these really unreasonable moments where I was like, I never realized how unimportant YouTube was to me as like a platform, as like a content platform. And like, I think it just made me realize that like, damn, there is a huge difference between like how much you like to just sit down with a video and just watch something and just enjoy it and discover new things. And for me, like, I don't fucking care. I don't give a shit about what's on YouTube.
But also, like, to be fair and to your credit, recommendations right now are trash. Like, the website is just littered with junk. Like,
with shorts especially, it's really bad.
It's so egregious, especially on mobile, dude. You can't escape them. You just can't escape them. And I feel like I'm very rarely getting recommended, like, good shit. Like, good shit from new channels I haven't seen before.
It does make me wonder, actually, because, like, I did used to watch, you know, things and discover things that I would end up liking. But it did make me wonder, like, is it the fact that YouTube is not important to me, or is it the fact that I've just been recommended too much crap I don't want to see one too many times?
Recommendations have objectively gotten worse.
Have gotten worse. Okay.
In my opinion, as someone who is an avid YouTube watcher and a huge consumer of YouTube, especially during the pandemic, recommendations during the pandemic were really good, really fucking good. Upwards of like 20, like anywhere, the whole era, honestly, from like 2018 to like 2021. Recommendations pretty good. Like, recommendations pretty good. And then it started to get a little worse, but this year especially, I felt like it's just the last couple of months have just been horrible.
You know what it might be, too, is that during the pandemic, there was a lot more, like, people just kind of discovering things. They just had more time to give things a chance.
Yeah.
And, like, now it's an issue of, like, YouTube really has to just push, like, they're pushing the shorts too much. I think that's the big problem.
Because here's the thing now, too, with YouTube, is when YouTube initially went from, oh, it's all about the views to all, it's all about the watch time, there was a merit behind that decision, because if you're watching content and you're engaged with it for a whole 15-minute run, that must mean the video is entertaining on some level and should be seen by more people. That makes sense. And it decently makes sense. But YouTube now doesn't care about watch time of the video. They just care about people being on YouTube. Like, it's not about, like, watch time of the actual individual content. It's just, like, you're here and you're not on Instagram. You're not on Reddit. You're not on Netflix or Hulu or anywhere else you could be on your fucking phone right now. But on YouTube, watching fucking shorts in the fucking shorts hellhole where no one makes any money, dropping the worst fucking content imaginable. And fuck it. Like, fuck this shit. It sucks now. It just sucks now. And, like, I've just come to grips with that recently. That, like, it's okay that it sucks now. And that, like, I don't have to do it. Like, I don't have to force myself to do it or, like, participate in, like, the game of YouTube anymore.
Yeah, that's one of the main reasons where, like, I've started to just accept that, like, I'm not interested in making videos at this time.
Yeah.
Now that Splatoon is, like, officially, like, for good, gonna close down in April, I might make a real effort towards that just to be able to say I did it and to, like, never have that regret. But, like, even then, like, I'm not gonna pursue it all that seriously. Unless I can do it, like, my way and really get it to be how I want it to be.
Yeah.
Which might be impossible just based on, like, what I see in my head versus, like, what you can actually do in that game and how much it would just require. But yeah, like, I think the era of, like, wanting to be on YouTube to, like, build a community and see lots of stuff and experience lots of stuff, like, for me, it's just over. Like,
it's over, dude. It's over for everyone, bro. It's over for everyone, I feel. It's like a different environment, and it's just a different era. And
I got recommended something a couple weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, that I thought was just like, I had a moment, a literal moment where I wish I could have seen their analytical data to know if everyone else clicked off at the exact same point that I did. It was, so I think we've talked before about like the trans video essayist, like the very specific archetype of the trans video essayist.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, one of them did a video that I liked about Ocarina of Time.
The Ocarina of Time video, yeah.
Yeah,
we've talked about that before. That's a good video.
It was really on point to all the things that I feel about just the discussion of Ocarina of Time, like, and especially, like, the ethos of the game, the confidence of it, and, like, kind of why that affects people. And as well, just, like, the obsession with talking about it and, like, having a take on the game instead of just enjoying the fucking game. And what it's doing as a work of art, like, that was a really good one. But otherwise, there are two kinds of, like, trans content specifically video essays creators. People who are pulling from the ContraPoints where they're discussing the discussion. That's that Ocarina of Time video. And then the other one is, like, people who are more on, like, the Sarah Zed, like, internet kind of, like, discussing internet eras or discussing, like, relevant internet topics.
Yeah, I like that content. Sarah Zed.
Yeah, no, I like Sarah Zed as well. But, like, with the trans woman specific one, and I guess there's the third one, which is what JXZ, whatever her name is. She did the Doctor Who video essay, the 5-hour one, the Smiling Friends is painfully funny video. Like, that really kind of brought some light to how good the show is. From an analytical critical standpoint, gave it even more validity than it already had. She's done some good stuff, but, like, the oddly specific one of, like, people who like are really, like, they're talking about, like, very common internet things, but, like, where they all have the exact same, like, political background and the exact same political opinions and the exact same, yep, like problems with everything. And so there was a video that was like a look back on like the on the 2010s feminist era, like when the, like when it was like pop culture, like feminism was pop culture.
Oh yeah.
And I lived through that, and I saw that video, and I was really hoping for a ContraPoints-esque, like, let's really delve into like how this happened,
really,
and why.
Dig deep into like what the fuck was going on.
Yeah, like, and there is a bit of that, but like it's also a little too like bleeding heart for my liking, I think. The Sarah Zed video about sacrificial media, like, I really needed to see that video, the High Guardian Spice one, because like that's a really good point of like people really got swept up in how bad the show was and trying to make it out to be like even worse than it is, even though at the end of the day, like, when I finished the show, I think I said, like, yeah, it kind of ends at like a 4 out of 10. It's okay, it improves.
Yeah, it's just like online hyperbole and shit.
Yeah, I really needed like that particular call out, especially. So I really like when videos are deep dives into these kinds of things. But my main problem with like with that video was that it was a little too much like I don't want to say it was cringe, but it was cringe. It was someone who was like vaguely nostalgic for the era of like feminism that it was in. And like there was this kind of slant of like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't very good, but let's do it again. Let's bring it back a little bit. Like, and there was an exact moment where she said something that like she was like, it, you know, this idea of like activism as a pop culture fad, it gave us, you know, a sense of like what we were doing and what we needed to do. And then she put a picture of like the communist flag behind her, and this idea of like what we need to do is like be communist. I clicked off the video immediately, and I laughed, and I was like, could you be any more online than like, could you just be any more of an online video essayist?
And I will say, this is the beautiful thing about my life now, is that like I don't engage with any of these fuckers anymore.
It's great.
I was talking to you about this the other day, Miles. I have unlocked a new power on the skill tree of life, and that is befriending real life characters.
Yes, actual Seinfeld cast members.
Yes, characters that like let's break down what a person
what a character is
and a character. There's two types of humans that you meet in your life. There are people and there are characters. Not all characters are people.
For people
not
who are
all
Chris
people
Rock,
are characters.
For people who are Chris Rock fans, there is a joke structure very similar to this, and it's true.
I don't know what he's referring to.
I'll tell you off the record.
I'm sure it involves the N-word.
It does! very famous Chris Rock joke. Yeah.
Well, anyways, Chris Rock stole my fucking joke. Binky Barnes stole my joke. he stole my mummy joke. I can't believe it. I'm gonna be pissed off for the rest of the fucking episode. Chris Rock stole my joke.
Chris Rock stole my.
Dude, Chris Rock said, "Fucking awesome episode." Yeah.
Chris Rock said, "Tuttenstein was a Shota before I did." Did I ever bring that up? How off the record, I decided that the ultimate cartoon Shota, because we were talking about like the Western lolly, the ultimate Western Shota is Tuttenstein.
That's fucking legendary, bro. Tuttenstein, yeah. The Shota is
Tuttenstein the Shota. I wish that had come up on camera, but no, we were too busy talking about Ruby Gloom. But yeah, so anyways, as far as characters go, Sam.
Yeah, like I've been able to meet and befriend just characters. Now, characters are people who have a peculiar personality or things they do that stick out immediately, and you know them for these things. Does that feel like a fair definition of a character in this instance?
Yeah, I think a good clarification is, like, is their way of life so obvious to you? Like, does it stand out as not normal enough? Because you have, you know, like, you have people who have, like, strange habits, right? You know?
Yeah.
People who have strange habits. But, like, when you go to someone's place and they just have a bed in an empty room, they're a character. When you go to a bar with someone, right? and they get mad about what's on the TV, and like, and they ask to fucking change the channel because they don't like what's on the TV. Like, that's kind of a character moment where, like, wow, this really is a problem for you, huh? You can't just, like, characters are people who have such specific traits that they just can't let something go, or like, they can't do something normal. Like, it always has to be a production with them.
That's not necessarily true always for all characters. Because some people, because a character can also be someone who's just like fucking particularly wacky or quirky. But it's like one of these things where it's like they are known for what they do. Like,
yes.
You know, and who they are. Because like I met my neighbor across the way, which is what got me thinking about this. I've become fast friends with him. His name, I'm going to shout him out. His name is Court, C-O-R-T. And I'm like, that's a fucking character.
That's a character name.
He drove back home with his shirt off. He enters his home through his balcony. He is a character. That's a character. The homeless man I met, Pee-wee, he was a character.
Pee-wee's a character name,
because he pointed out the hummingbird and had an interaction with the hummingbird. He's a character because of that interaction.
And this is where you and I...
And his name is Pee-wee.
This is where you and I differ, Sam. This is where you and I differ, because you meet Missouri characters. And Missouri characters are pleasant, and they're strange, but wonderful. They're like Twin Peaks characters.
And they're very friendly.
They're like
goofy, but friendly.
Yeah, they're like Twin Peaks characters, right? I met Los Angeles characters. And they're more like Seinfeld characters, where they piss you off.
Nah, they're like Always Sunny characters, where they're just fucking cruel assholes.
Yeah, they're terrible. They're terrible people. That's the other one. No, LA people is more It's Always Sunny. They're like, New York is more petty. Like, so I guess they would be more Seinfeld. Yeah, California is It's Always Sunny. Where like, they want to ruin a life if something bothers them. Like, this oddly specific, like, they would go to a witch to have you cursed, and they would tell you about going to a witch to have someone cursed, and they would talk about it like it's a perfectly normal thing to do instead of sociopath behavior.
And it's all because you said you didn't like the Barbie movie that much.
My saying I don't like the Barbie movie, like if I was still on an old internet show I used to be on and I said I didn't like the Barbie movie, like two or three people on the panel would just start fucking flipping out on me and like telling me to die and that I'm stupid and just like all this.
You're not a real ally if you don't watch the Barbie movie.
And to be fair, I'm the exact same way, but you'll never believe where I fucking spent the last 5 years. If you're wondering how I got like this, how I got so fucking angry.
Why I hate everyone.
Yeah, why
all shitty LA's fault. Goddamn Jeffrey Epstein and his fucking android bodysuit and his fucking... And he ruined the fucking state of California. It's been annexed from the United States. We're back to fucking 49 states.
Yeah, and
we cut it off. It's in the ocean now.
They actually took a saw, like Bugs Bunny, and just cut it off.
Just cut it off.
Yeah,
we took California and pushed it somewhere else.
Push! Push! That's a great episode. Oh, SpongeBob, yeah. That's a great one. So here's the question. What state has the SpongeBob characters? Because Missouri kind of has some SpongeBob vibe. You know what? All right, here's how we're going to end the show, Sam. I'm going to name a couple shows, and we have to decide if it's more L.A. or Missouri characters.
Respect. Respect. Let's do it. Okay. And you also live in Florida, so we'll throw in Florida, too.
We'll do Florida. The problem is I don't know enough Florida characters.
Like, oh, you don't know any Florida characters? Okay, that's cool. We'll keep it a Missouri and L.A. character.
I got to be perfectly honest. Florida's way more normal than you'd think it is.
It's just because of the laws regarding openness with crimes or something.
We publish our like criminal records. We make them public.
Yeah. So
every state in the U.S. is as weird as Florida. You just get to know about it.
Yeah, with Florida. But anyways, yeah. Let's name a couple shows. I got one. Let's start with Ed, Edd n Eddy. Are the Ed, Edd n Eddy as
fucking
the cul-de-sac kids?
So L.A. dude. They're all those kids are so mean, and they're such. Fucking, but the thing is, they're mean, but they're also fucking pussies the moment you push back on them. Like, that's kind of a big thing about all the cul-de-sac kids, is like, they can dish it out, but they can't take it.
Yeah, no, that's true
mega
for, like,
LA.
All 13 of them.
Yeah, mega LA.
LA moment.
Okay, so, you said Ed, Edd n Eddy. I'm going to say, because I want to do stuff that I know you've seen, okay?
Yeah.
Phil Moore.
Fillmore. Oh, bro. Dude, oh, Missouri characters. All Missouri characters. Easy, 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 easy.
Yeah.
Missouri characters. Because, like, the kids are, it's like, oh, I lost my goldfish.
Yeah.
I gotta find my goldfish.
Very simple problems and, yeah. and very simple reasons for doing everything.
I gotta get my baseball cards back. Like,
yeah, they're always trying to help. Like, the thing about that show that I really love is that there's the perp, but then there's always someone who's, like, a victim of the perp that they kind of have to help out, and there's a very sympathetic, like, character at the center of it. It's just some really good
God,
shit.
Fillmore's so fucking good for no reason.
But it's because, like, real writers wrote it. Like, real people wrote it.
It's because people who wrote real cop procedurals wrote Fillmore. That's why it's good, dude.
Is that true? Were they on cop procedurals?
I mean, I'd believe it.
I would too, yeah. Because I was talking about this with The Ghost and Molly McGee versus, like, a lot of the other shows. Like, The Ghost and Molly McGee is written by and created by the people who made Brandy and Mr. Whiskers, which is, like a more OG kind of era cartoon.
And I remember Brandy. So what was the plot of that show exactly? Were they trapped on an island?
Yeah, they were trapped on an island together, and it was about, like, a bratty, like, pampered dog and a circus animal. And just kind of them learning to, like, get along, and especially for the dog to learn how to stop being such a prissy.
Bitch.
Yeah, literally such
real,
a bitch.
For real.
For real, for real. Yeah, and so, like, but again, you know, they've been around the writer's room for a longer time. And so, like, even though The Ghost in Molly McGee has, like, a lot of kind of, like, elements that are very standard in these more modern shows, like an overly peppy female protagonist who's just so fucking happy to be alive, and like a sort of, like, hapless sidekick character, Maya, and this is like Maya and Miguel, one of the more older versions of that.
That fucking brings me back.
Yeah, that's a classic one. There's other ones of these that I
do. Maya Miguel, L.A. bro.
Maya and Miguel is very L.A.
Very, very L.A. proms.
Yeah, but
Maya was always just getting up on the most obnoxious
bullshit.
Shit.
Yeah,
on that show. She just would get hooked up on, like, the nonsense. She was petty, dude. Is Maya from Maya and Miguel one of the most underrated petty characters?
Yeah, one of the most underrated history? like she's the George Costanza of children's show characters. She gets mad about the Twix bar because the Twix bar is the only one with the cookie crunch. Everyone knows this. Molly McGee, like, does have, like, written by writers feel, whereas, like, something like The Owl House has written by Tumblr comic artist feel, which is, like, where I'm kind of landing with the digital circus as well. Hazbin Hotel has written by Tumblr writer character feel.
Dude, do the Code Lyoko kids... Are they L.A. or Missouri?
They're super L.A. Oh, my God, dude. Those guys are so fucking L.A. It's actually nuts. Like, you got this, like, fucking simp who just does fucking nothing but simp the whole fucking show. And Jeremy, you're the wind beneath my wings. Oh. just the straight up nut. Of that moment, like, dude, you only meet fucking pathetic simps like that in Los Angeles.
In L.A.
Yeah, like, or on the internet. Like, Ulrich just not being able to fucking have a normal relationship with a girl who obviously likes him. Like, he just can't fucking just seal the deal. It's so L.A., like, the relationship problems that people in L.A. have
the drama, bro, the just, needless drama.
Yeah, and it's just like, why don't you just fucking have a conversation, Christ's sake, and fucking... odd, and it's just inability to be normal. Like,
it's like, okay, I got one. Clarence, Missouri kids,
super Missouri,
Missouri characters, super yeah. Missouri.
They're
characters.
All decent, normal people. Whereas, like, Loud House, mega LA. All of those fucking kids are brats. They're such brats,
dude. I love how it's like good and decent Missouri, hell LA.
Yeah. Let's try and think of a more like. Like
Arthur, Illinois.
Arthur's
Illinois
very
characters.
Illinois. Yeah, Arthur's very, very Illinois.
I don't know why I, like, feel it, because it's very Boston. It's really, technically, it's like a Boston suburb, but, like, I always associate
it. I think it's just the fact that they're black and white. Like, they can be as close as they want, and they can be kind of petty. And
well, because, like, to me, like, it was always Elwood City was always a good, like, it always came across as very, like suburban city type of deal, because there's Crown City, which is like 45-50 minutes drive from, like, Elwood City. I think it's about that. I get the you get the vibe that it's about that in the episodes where they go to Crown City, which I think is just one. Just the episode where Muffy goes with Sue Ellen. Remember that? Sorry, no. Arthur's been on the brain recently because I got recommended this banger video where someone did the cover of the intro, but it's a Midwest emo.
That's great.
And it just has been on my fucking mind. I listen to it all the fucking time now.
I love the mix of the Arthur theme song and Waiting for the End by Linkin Park. Do you remember that one? That's a really good one. Because they both have that same, like, reggaeton. Yeah, they both have the same reggaeton, like, vibe.
Yeah,
exact
it's good.
Same song.
And I also love Botanic Sage's Crazy Bus.
Crazy Bus is a really good one.
With
Mom!
With Let Mom Sleep. Dude, that is the hardest bar ever, bro.
Yeah, like, when he goes, Mom! And then Mom. It goes to wacky, woo-wee, like,
I as a
absolutely,
bus-a-looey!
Yeah. Crazy, God. Lazy, crazy, lazy bus!
So you know the lore behind Crazy Bus, right?
The song? Like
the song,
from,
yeah, not
from
the
Arthur?
Game, not the Genesis game.
Yeah,
and
well,
Arthur.
No, DW is obsessed with playing the song over and over again on her, yeah, like, she, CD player.
But, like, you know, so, like, why, so, like, basically, around season four, when they did the hour-long special with the Backstreet Boys, if you remember that.
No, I don't, sorry.
Which is awesome. It's called, Arthur, It's Only Rock and Roll, I think is the name of it. Which is funny, it's called Arthur, It's Only Rock and Roll, because Arthur is, like, a fucking side piece in this fucking hour special. He's a fucking C-tier character.
It's like it's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, where it's, yeah, not about fucking Charlie Brown.
It's
about
the Great
fucking
Linus.
Yeah. The election episode of Charlie Brown as well, which is also about Linus.
Yeah, and, like, in the fucking... Yeah, so it's Francine, Mrs. McGrady, Fern, I think, and Binky, and they perform with the Backstreet Boys, which is, like, a hysterical group of four,
yeah,
to be doing
well,
that.
Well, that's where the famous, the picture of, like, Binky playing the recorder, right? And it's, like, him and his, like, band.
It's... Yeah, that's it. Yeah, there's a couple of scenes where because there's the scene, there's the meme from the Bang on a Can All-Stars episode where he listens to the music and then gets transported to another dimension.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
And that's also the same episode where the Arthur meme comes in where his
fist.
The headphones are not on his, no,
oh,
his
headphones
are not on the his ears.
Yeah, yeah. Because the fist is the DW plane episode when he punches,
yeah,
her.
I told you not to touch it.
Yeah. No, I thought he said not to touch my plane. Does he say not to touch it? You would.
No,
you would
he
know.
Says I told you not to touch it, and then she's like, "But you built it all wrong.
It doesn't even fly." Yeah, and then he punches her.
God, that's just so good, dude.
Yeah. Great.
That episode is like that episode. So that's a banned Arthur episode. They don't play that one anymore. Which, like. On one hand, sucks dick because it's a good episode because, like, fucking physical violence between siblings does happen.
Yeah, and
like,
and it's important
worth
to,
talking
like,
about.
And it's also important, like, the metaphor of, like, him being afraid of Binky, like, it's the same thing with, like, an older sibling. Like, you're
like,
bigger than
them,
you're stronger than them. Like, of course it feels like that.
Because the problem with the episode is that the resolution is garbage. Like, the actual resolution of the episode is crap. Like, so I understand why they don't have it anymore. But damn, it's such an iconic episode. It really is such an iconic episode.
I do love how, like, a lot of these shows from our childhood were just, like, they just had such fucking rotten lessons. Because, like, all these writers always had to write a lesson into the show. And, like, most of them were terrible people. So, like, the lesson sucks.
The early season, like season one of Arthur, I've been re-familiarized with because I love listening to Elwood City Limits, which I need to get back to. I've gotten through the first like 30 or so episodes of their rewatch, and like a lot of lessons in the first season are just so like basic and like whatever bullshit. They get way better in like the Arthur hits its peak like The Simpsons, like seasons fucking end of season two to like. Season, like, 15.
Well, that's Seinfeld
Arthur's
as well.
Fire.
Yeah, Seinfeld, you know, season 2 into, like, you know, season 7, like, those are kind of considered the golden years.
Yeah.
Especially, like,
after,
end of season 2.
Because season 16 of Arthur, there's a, they switch to Flash, and it just, the quality drastic go down, bro. Drastic go down. And they also introduce a new character named LaDonna, who's super nice, totally fits into the cast okay, but they're like, they're way too amped up about their OC, bro, especially in season 16. She's like the main character in like 2/3 of the fucking new episodes. And you only get 10 episodes a season, and when she's the main character of fucking 5 of them, it's like, what the fuck? She's not that interesting. And also, like, she's like the new kid in town, and like, Swillen's been around for 20 years, so I know it's a little weird to be doing that with her still, but like, she's, you know, it's like, what the fuck are we doing?
No,
to be
honest,
her younger brother, Bud, LaDonna's younger brother, Bud, becomes DW's, like, go-to friend character, which is why LaDonna is, like, constantly in the story as, like, a tertiary character, because if DW's involved, Bud's gonna be involved now, which is great, because that means Emily gets fucking sent to the goddamn Shadow Realm going forward, and Emily, in my opinion, Emily is the worst character in Arthur.
That's the imaginary friend, right?
No, that's Nadine. No, Nadine's
thank
base,
you so much.
Bro.
Yeah,
Nadine's base.
Because that's I was surprised because I like Nadine.
No, Nadine's Nadine's fucking awesome, bro. Nadine's better the older you get, because you see they have really good attention to detail with Nadine, and the fact that like nobody looks at her, like nobody who shouldn't be seeing her sees her or acknowledges her, or it's like they're really fucking good about that shit, which I find funny. But no, Emily is DW's rich, like, French friend. Who she wears the blue dress. She initially wears, like, a pink dress, but then gets, like, character redesign in, like, the later seasons. And she wears, like,
a blue
dress.
It's like how they... I love when shows do this, where they, like, have a reason to redesign the character for whatever reason, and they have to make a whole episode out of it. No, one of my favorites is, the Jimmy Neutron episode where they give Libby her new haircut, and like the convoluted, like the excessively convoluted steps necessary just to reveal her new fucking design or new haircut, which is that they go to an ancient pyramid to discover a bunch of mummies.
Oh, yeah, I remember,
and then
that
she
episode.
Looks a lot like their old queen. So they have to like style her hair like the queen. And then she goes, you know what? I'm gonna keep this. And then she does.
That's wild, dude. I love random moments of continuity in, like, episodic shows.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, this is purely episodic, but here, one out of every 30 episodes you watch, you're gonna get a
something,
just
something is gonna change.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, something simple is gonna change. Like, oh, he wears a green hoodie now instead of a blue one.
The like, Danny Phantom D, which that one is a little more dramatic. That one's a little more dramatic, but, like... Like, just the fact that it feels like that entire episode is about giving Danny a more iconic, like... logo is so silly. Like, I'm sorry, if you didn't do it the first time, then you're shit out of luck. Sorry, boys. That's the character now.
Oh, man. But anyways, I think that's all for this week.
Yeah, this was fun.
This was fun. This was a good show. Miles, I got nothing else to fucking... I got nothing else to say today. I'm fucking tapped out, bro. I fucking had a long-ass fucking week on these
streets,
bro.
Yeah, let's just call it here. Let's, you know, for our final words, we'll say get some sleep, rest well. I guess try out The Amazing Digital Circus. I do recommend it. Just try to ignore just the glaring problems that I brought up that are probably going to bother the fuck out of you. Yeah, now that I've just made them apparent to you. Just watch Smiling Friends.
Yeah, thank you. If you watch Smiling Friends...